I'm author and athlete Brad Kearns. Welcome to the Be Rad Podcast, where we explore ways to pursue peak performance with passion throughout life. Visit bradkearns.com for great resources on healthy eating, exercise, and lifestyle. And here we go with the show.
The ultimate goal that I have for most of my readers and adherents and followers is I want you to be intuitive about your meals, so that there's never a thought process of like, okay, what would Mark do? Or how would Mark be yelling at me right now? Or what did I read in that last book that said, you know, I can't have this at this meal? No, you just intuitively over time adjust and adapt to whatever setting it is. When I do deadlifts, I'm out of breath. It takes me a long time to recover to be able to do the next set. My heart's beating really fast. That's cardio. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a signal that your willingness to do the work. So your brain tells your legs and everything to drop down and lift this heavy weight. And the heart's just going, all right, I guess it's time to get to work. So we got to beat faster. The heart has no say in the matter. The heart is it's responding to the signals produced by your wanting to do the work, and then you're doing the work with the muscles that you have. So any form of exercise is cardio. That's really the greatest misconception about calories in, calories out, is that you can't just fix a shitty diet with portion control. Yeah. It doesn't work that way. Yeah. You gotta eat nutritious food, calorie-dense food.
Greetings, my fitness-minded listeners. I want to acquaint you with the Primal Fitness Expert Certification Program, the most comprehensive home study multimedia fitness education course in the world. If you want to enhance your personal knowledge of all aspects of leading a healthy, active, fit lifestyle, this total immersion course will be life-changing. I'm the lead instructor and author of the course, and we have 14 chapters of extensive written content with over 100 accompanying videos covering topics such as general everyday movement, including micro workouts and dynamic workstation tips, the full experience of gym-based strength training and all the different modalities, a complete presentation on all aspects of sprinting, both running and low impact options, an assortment of high intensity interval training and high intensity repeat training strategies, a detailed education on the principles and practical application of aerobic endurance training, and extensive commentary, the most you will find in any publication, on all aspects and symptoms of overtraining and burnout. We even have fascinating peripheral topics like integrating nasal diaphragmatic breathing, dynamic stretching, injury prevention, and developing a peak performance mindset. It's really something, this course. We went all out for over 2 years with a great team to develop this amazing home-based fitness education for you. And you get one-on-one expert email support and private Facebook group connection throughout your studies to ensure that you absorb everything optimally and you pass your series of exams and get certified. So go to primalhealthcoach.com/Brad to enjoy a very special limited time. And I'm not kidding. This is a big time discount just for you. 25% off your tuition. A fantastic premium offer at primalhealthcoach.com/Brad for the most comprehensive fitness course you can ever find.
Mark Sisson, I've been calling you in desperation for about 3 decades. Remember back in the triathlon times when I was training with some of the top guys and I just couldn't match their level of volume.
Right.
And I'm like, Mark, I sleep so much. I'm eating right. What's going on? And I kept asking you and peppering you like, but Pig wakes up the morning after a race and rides 100 miles. And finally, like, you ended the conversation thread with, hey man, life's a bitch. And it was the best answer ever. And I was like, yeah, man, why am I comparing to other people?
Right.
Why don't I just, you know, stay on my path and do what works for me and not worry about it? So yeah. It worked. And then here we are. Years later, we've been talking a lot offline because I'm calling you up going, Mark, there's some challenges to the fundamental principles of ancestral health, like fasting, keto, time-restricted feeding, carb restriction. And I've had some reflections lately. I'd love to run these by you.
Sure, yeah.
Have us all reflect a little bit.
Okay.
You've explained very nicely the concept of metabolic flexibility as the Holy Grail of health.
Is that's that it. Yeah, it? That's it. The Holy Grail of health. Yeah.
Now that metabolic flexibility means many things.
And it might be nice to like compare and contrast with this, I say, emerging concept of eat more, move more, get fitter,
right,
be more active,
right.
And that might conflict at first glance with how good can you get at fasting or optimizing your caloric intake rather than going and looking to eat more.
Well, I mean, first of all, let's go back 30 plus years to the advice or the observation, life's a bitch. It basically described this concept that we're all unique in some ways. Our basic metabolism works pretty much in alignment. You know, we all burn fat the same way. We all build muscle the same way. We all have immune systems that work the same way. It's just the degree to which we do these things, it varies. A lot of it has to do with our parental genetic contribution, you know, our what we inherited from our parents. Some of it has to do, a lot of it has to do with our current lifestyle and our diets and our exercise patterns. So the extent to which we build muscle or burn fat or support an immune system, you know, there are a lot of variables in what I would call this complex equation. And at the end of the day, you know, I think the biggest revelation from all of the ancestral health templates that have been cast about in the blogosphere and in books and seminars is basically the experiment of one. N=1. Like, you are an experiment of one. And as long as you are able to understand the basic principles of biology and metabolism, and as long as you're willing to observe what happens when you consciously make changes in your exercise patterns, then you can learn from that in a way that best suits you to moving toward your goal. So, there's an obligation to understand, to learn. There's an obligation to be willing to make changes and then and note the outcome of those changes, right? And then either choose to incorporate that or not into your life. So that gets us to this, the latest, calories in, calories out, which has been that's been a topic of discussion for decades within the community. Is it as simple as if I eat fewer calories and move more, I will lose weight? Or is it a bit more nuanced that it's, you know, does it come down to the types of calories that I choose to consume, the timing of those calories, the input, the amount of sleep I'm getting as it relates to stress and the stress impact on the calories? And I've always said and will always say it's extremely nuanced. And the idea that, I mean, we sort of hit upon this the other day. Some of our contemporaries in this space have said, they've swung the pendulum back toward kind of calories in, calories out, in that, you know, like eat more quality foods and move more is now the mantra. Like, eat more protein and move more. I don't disagree with that in principle. Eating more protein, I would say, even when we talk about food, we should probably break it down into its component parts. Mm-hmm. Protein is like the essential element, the most essential element of what we consume. And so if we ate mostly protein and then a little bit of fat and varied the amount of carbohydrate we took in, everyone would be well off for doing that. From there, you just have to decide how much protein am I willing to eat and how much carbohydrate do I want to consume in pursuit of a hedonistic, gustatory experience, right? Because at the end of the day, we still have to live our lives. We still have to consume these calories. We have to take in these nutrients, but we also want to enjoy the experience. Eating shouldn't be this thing that, oh shit, I have to do because I brought my Tupperware and I've got my little skinless, boneless chicken breast and steamed rice, you know, and it's time to eat. And if I don't eat, then somehow my metabolism will go haywire, you know, and I'll lose all my gains with a Z. So, you know, we're going to try, I guess, in this talk here, in this piece here, to kind of unpack some of that. Mm-hmm. And it ultimately, ultimately, it doesn't matter, because ultimately you're going to live a great life. You're going to, much of your enjoyment of life is going to be up to you and the choices you make and how you experience life and your perception of what goes on and how you react to the negative things that go on about you. So this diet part of it is one little area of life that I happen to have a lot of information on. And I think I can give some advice, but even that is tempered by the fact that there are so many alternatives, so many choices, so many different ways to eat, and to build muscle, burn fat, support an immune system, have all the energy you want, not get sick, and not get hungry.
Right. Those are important checkpoints. And every time you say metabolic efficiency, metabolic flexibility, what's the least amount of food I can eat, and nail all these objectives. So we definitely don't want to take that out of context. But I should relate my recent experiment where I said, okay, I'm listening to this new information and processing it. I'm going to try to wake up in the morning, and instead of my historic pattern of fasting or nibbling on dark chocolate until midday, and then I'd prepare my right. delicious meal and then have another meal, two meals a day. Great book I heard.
Yeah.
Now I said, okay, I'm going to wake up and hit a huge bowl of fruit and a huge high protein smoothie with liver chunks in there and fruit and creatine and all these performance agents. So I'm fully fueled every morning versus relying on my metabolic flexibility that I've worked so hard for to feel great and be alert and do a workout and then go sit down to my meal at midday. I can't report any amazing breakthroughs where now I'm setting records on the track. In fact, I'm injured, so I'm not setting any records. I don't know if that matters. However, one important thing to note is my body composition, my body weight is the same, even though I've been consuming significantly more total calories for this past, now it's about 6 months. So the question comes, where'd those calories go? Am I turning up some important dials like my thyroid, my immune function, my performance and my recovery rate? Or does it matter? Do you have any observations?
So I only have observations that are sort of based on my personal experience and my opinions. But basically, I would say you started this new experiment fully metabolically mm-hmm. flexible. So you've achieved metabolic flexibility. And by that, we mean you've spent years with different practices that we've both engaged in, whether it was primal to begin with, then keto, so certainly low carb, high fat keto, then it was restricted eating, intermittent fasting, two meals a day. So over the years, you've developed the metabolic flexibility, which gives you the leeway to now be able to consume more calories, burn, and still efficiently burn the carbohydrate, the excess carbohydrate that I might suggest you're taking in, the carbs that you don't really need, but it doesn't matter that you eat them. So there's a differentiation right there. You don't really need those extra carbs, but the fact that you can eat them and you can burn them off selectively initially in your workouts doesn't negate any of your metabolic flexibility, doesn't negate any of the work you've done. It's just telling me that you've entered a phase of metabolic flexibility where you can get away with consuming more calories throughout the day. Now, we would ask, is that a good thing, or is that a bad thing, or does that have no impact at all? I don't know the answer, but I do know, or I do suspect, that once again, in consuming more calories than we actually need, the body, and especially a body that's efficiently adapted to burning fat and manufacturing ketones, a body will be prepared to amp up the metabolism and find ways to burn off the excess calories, ergo not altering body composition by adding body fat simply because you've added calories. So this kind of brings up a whole question about, like, is there an optimum number of calories that you take in a day, or is it an optimum range of calories that you can take in a day? And at the low end of the range, as long as you don't exceed the lower and go even lower than that, you're fine, and you're adapted and adept at doing what you're doing. And at the high end of that same range, and maybe that range is 1,000 calories a day for you, from lowest to highest. If you're within that range, even at the high end of the range, you're still your body's adjusting to the intake of the extra intake of calories by the thermic effect of food, by revving at a slightly higher rate, by incorporating, by maybe using brown fat at a higher level. Like if I was doing an experiment with you, I would want to know, like, what's your sleep right. temperature now?
Yeah.
In a controlled situation, are you sleeping hotter now?
Yeah.
Than you would have at the low end of that caloric range.
Temperature right now, temperature yeah. throughout the day.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's no wrong answer. Well, there's a lot of wrong answers. There's no right answer to this. There's several right answers, right? There's a lot of wrong ways to do this, but there are a lot of right ways to figure out, how to incorporate this. And as we discussed a couple of days ago, I don't even look at my nutrition plan meal to meal or day to day. I look at it maybe over the course of a week. Mm-hmm. Like, did I cover all the bases? Did I have enough protein? Did I have ample protein to support muscle growth, bone growth, the manufacturing and remanufacturing of all the enzyme systems? Did I get enough fat to offset the need to burn my own stored body fat? Did I get enough carbs to fill the glycogen reserves enough to do the hard glycolytic workouts that I did? So when you talk about your performance hasn't changed, and you're entering a workout in the morning fully fueled.
Maybe it's after the workout, but just like you said, over the course of a week's time.
Right. But I mean, you made a point there. So fully fueled. So a lot of people say, well, a lot of trainers would say, make sure you have something to eat before you come to the gym. I want you to be fully fueled for your workout.
Yeah.
And like, what does fully fueled mean to me? It doesn't mean that you have something in your belly that's just hanging out there, diverting blood away from your muscles to try and, or when you work out, diverting the digesting process, the blood away from that.
Right. The opposite.
The opposite of that. And if you've crafted a workout schedule that isn't an elite level workout schedule, but is one contemplated to maintain or build muscle mass, maintain energy, and hit that same peak of health and fitness. In other words, you're not training so much that fitness continues to go up, but health declines. Mm-hmm. Then I would submit that your muscles are already they're already full of glycogen. And whether you have, 500 grams of glycogen in your muscles or 425, you still have enough to get through a hard workout.
What if they're half full? I still have enough.
You still have enough.
Maybe I'll get near empty and then go have a big meal.
To which, at which point some coaches would say that's the best way to train because you're training in a, even though you've got enough glycogen in your muscles, if you drop it down to empty by the end of the workout, that's that point at which your body makes the adaptation to become more metabolically efficient, more metabolically flexible, so that the next time you do this, it'll be, quote, easier. Of course, the process of training involves not doing the same thing over and over again. Well, for a lot of people, it does, but trying to improve in a stair-step fashion, in a ratchet fashion, in a cyclical fashion, because over time, even elite athletes, especially elite athletes, will go through a cycle where they're build, and then they'll stop and they'll have to drop off for a little bit just to get the repair and all of the rebuilding necessary to hit the next level of upswing, the next level of improvement. So where does that leave us? I mean, I agree with when our contemporaries say, make sure you eat enough and mostly protein, and make sure you move enough. I've always said that. The question is, what's enough?
What's enough? And then also the question that keeps coming up for me is like, what's possible versus what's optimal? And it opens up a whole nother a paradigm here where this ancestral health movement has become so popular and it's exploded and there's all these different opinions. And people might be forgetting at the very start what you said with the Primal Blueprint 10 laws is these laws are to be adapted into the realities of modern life, including wanting to enjoy yourself. And it now seems like we're obsessed with honoring our ancestors to the extent that we model them and all the shit that they went through. Mm-hmm. And I believe that, you know, the hunter-gatherer message is that they were focused on survival.
Yeah.
They weren't focused on peak performance. They were not trying to break Van Niekerk's record in the 400 meters, nor, like you always mentioned, they could do their amazing endurance feat and kill the antelope stalking it for 4 hours, but they sure as heck weren't doing it the next day,
right,
getting up and running an easy 10 or whatever. So I want to go for optimal rather than what's possible.
Right.
And I know keto is possible for me and doing workouts and all that,
right,
but I don't think I was optimal because the stress factors were stacking up on one side of the balance scale.
Yeah.
My age, the workout that I wanted to do, the fact that I was deliberately restricting carbohydrates, which might have given me a performance benefit if I did go home and refuel with a big dose. So between what's possible and what's optimal.
Right. And you were doing, cold hormesis, right?
Right.
Which is a huge stressor.
And having a stressful modern life where I was firing up my computer and engaging in more stress-producing
building a business,
activities, and getting divorced, whatever, when I was doing keto.
Yeah, yeah.
All this stuff, boom, boom, boom.
Yeah, yeah. So that when I say it's a complex equation, it's a very complex equation. And so it's so difficult to try and identify one variable and say, if I just change this one variable, everything's going to be better.
Yeah.
So you have to look at it in the context of an entire, a life. And I would say, you know, had you not gone through a divorce, had you not been doing cold hormesis, had you been refueling after your heart, like specifically refueling after your hard glycolytic workouts with 150 grams of carbs from sweet potato or something like that, then keto would have been sustainable for the rest of your life for you. I, on the other hand, I'm people, you know, because we've written a couple of books on keto and intermittent fasting and two meals a day. And I'm not keto. I'm keto-ish. But when I say I'm not keto, there are days on end. There are 3-4 days in a row. Well, I'll have nothing but protein and fat, right? Then there'll be a day where I have 350 grams of carbs.
Gelato and pasta and vacation. Yeah.
But because I'm metabolically flexible and efficient, the only thing I might notice is, I might get bloating from sugar or, you know, some form of pasta that doesn't agree with me because of the wheat content, the gluten content. But the actual composition of the calories and the macro profile has no short-term or, of course, no long-term, but no short-term effect on, well, I'm bloated and I'm kicked out of keto, so my, you know, so now I'm logy because my brain is fuzzy because I gave it a dose of carbs, and when I go back to keto, it takes a while. No, I'm flexible enough that I've developed this skill, which is basically the ancestral skill. There's food and there isn't food. Full stop. You just have to be able to, to go with that flow. And then in the context of modern society, understand that when there's food, you don't need to overeat, because even though we're wired to overeat, we're wired to overeat because for 2.5 million years of human evolution, they say 3 million now, and 100 million years of mammalian evolution before that, we were wired to overeat because there was not going to be any food for a while. And so we have this amazing system that takes excess food that
stores
we take
it.
In
it's incredible.
And stores it as fuel that we get to carry around with us, conveniently located right above the center of gravity, like on the hips and on the thighs and on the ass and on the belly. And then it sort of works its way up. That's why this, you know, the apple shape is kind of even the pear shape that heavy people find themselves in. Those are so advantageous in a survival situation. If you have to walk, you know, over the next 5 days, you have to walk 100 miles to get to the next source of food. Imagine if we stored our fat on our shoulders, right? We'd be top heavy.
Yeah.
Look, it's bad enough that we're on 2 feet. We're basically segways.
Yeah.
How do we not fall over every step we take? Well, you know, part of it's because of the center of gravity. Obviously balance. Mm-hmm. Obviously, most of us want to go barefoot or wear minimalist footwear
stylish minimalist footwear.
Yeah. Anyway, the ultimate goal that I have for most of my readers and adherents and followers is I want you to be intuitive about about your meals so that there's never a thought process of like, okay, what would Mark do? Or how would Mark be yelling at me right now? Or what did I read in that last book that said, you know, I can't have this at this meal. No, you just intuitively over time adjust and adapt to whatever setting it is. And that could be, you know, shopping at Erewhon or Whole Foods on an empty stomach and buying and buying stuff that you looks really good right now. And I'm really, you know, and you know, or it could be going to a restaurant and rather than going, well, there's nothing I can eat on this menu, there's nothing I can do here, to knowing exactly how to order on any off of any menu. The first experience you and I had of that, I don't know if you remember this, but I came up to Sacramento to give a talk. And we went out to a
Dos Coyotes, the local chain of Fresh Mex.
And we look at the menu and it's taco, burrito, empanada, tostada, and it's wheat tortilla, corn tortilla. And you and I looked at each other and we're like, I'd like a bowl of carne asada, a bowl of guacamole, and some sour cream. And it was one of the best meals we ever had.
Yeah. You know? Well, they were confused for a while when you asked for like a double side order of steak.
Yeah.
And they didn't know what to charge. And it ended up to be like $4 or $6 for this giant plate of meat.
Yeah. It was crazy.
Yeah. You just tricked them.
Yeah.
Well, you bring up those points about the constant access to food now, the unfettered access to indulgent foods. And it occurs to me that a lot of the success of the things that we've been talking about and the strategies that people have employed with great success, keto, fasting, all that, the benefits are essentially indirect because they keep you away from unfettered access to indulgent foods, or they help regulate your emotions and your issues that you have that you've developed toward food for your whole life. So now all of a sudden, because you're fasting until noon, Dr. Peter Attia mentions that this wonderful research about time-restricted feeding, and it's so awesome for lifespan, the only benefit is a default reduction in the number of calories you consume. It's not the magic of tightening up your window. Oh, I'm now on a six-hour window instead of an eight-hour window. I'm doing better. It's only the backdoor benefits, which is not to discount them in any way because we need that control. Mark Bell talks about just controlling your life. Everyone wants to have a sense of control. Mm-hmm. So now you have a sense of control about food because you're keto and you have your card to prove it. You always talk about the keto card. You're not going to lose your keto card if you have one dessert.
Yeah.
But if that indeed is the main benefit of these things, and I want to consider myself, I want to rise above all that and just focus on peak performance, recovery, more peak performance, better body composition, better muscle mass throughout life, then am I asking myself a different question and going back to the eat more, move more concept if I solely choose highly nutritious, easy to digest foods and I'm eating more?
Yeah.
Could I theoretically, you're talking about different ways to burn off those calories and I don't need them, but if I need them to qualify for the master's track meet,
right?
Is this a reasonable strategy to just hit it hard? Dr. Tommy Wood told me this a few years ago. He said, eat as much nutritious food as you can until you gain a pound of fat and then you dial it back.
Yeah.
And that's what he considers optimal. But that's distinct from someone who's getting better and better at fasting and tightening up their window in the name of autophagy and health and all these things.
No, I would agree with Dr. Tommy Wood. I would say that if you're in a performance mode and your goal is to continue to improve, then you need to look at granularly at the meals, right? Mm-hmm. You need to look at what's the workout plan over the next 7 days and how do the meals assist with my accomplishing the goal of the workout. So, and to the extent that eating the most amount of nutritious food that you can without gaining extra body fat, I would say that's probably a really good plan because as we said for 20 years, and I've said for 40, training for elite competition is antithetical to health. Mm-hmm. So there's a point at which you say, I want to improve my performance. I'm willing to sacrifice my health, whatever that looks like, a little bit to get to that level. And it may not be some obvious you know, short-term thing. You might get more colds and flu because you're stressed out more. But there's the recognition that at some point there's an optimum level where health and fitness climb the chart mm-hmm. together because what's good for one is good for the other. But then as you start to add the elements that require the breakdown of the body, and that's really what physical performance at its highest level looks like. Like how incrementally more can I break my body down, but not too much, mm-hmm. so that with the right rest and nutrition, I build it back even stronger within the next 24, 48, 72 hour period. So it is a different mindset when you're seeking peak performance. I'm coming from that. It's weird because this has sort of been a through line in my life, but you know, I was pre-med in college and I realized in order to get into med school, you had to get all A's. This is back, I don't know what it is like now, but back in my day.
Hey man, how's your sexual function? Oh, uncomfortable talking about it? Look, we talk about our injured knees, our belly fat, so it's time to get focused on function. I want to tell you about Gainswave. This is a cutting-edge protocol where a handheld device sends low-intensity shockwaves into your penile blood vessels to stimulate a healing response and promote increased blood circulation and the growth of new blood vessels. A skilled practitioner puts the Gainswave magic wand onto your magic wand, and after a series of 6 to 12 very brief treatments, which are painless but extremely effective, you get real results. Gainswave reports an 80% success rate. Now, we know that popping pills is a popular penile protocol, but when you're working with clogged pipes, you just get a temporary band-aid effect when you take prescription drugs. Gainswave addresses the cause of age-related decline by stimulating growth factors and activating dormant stem cells. Translation, stronger, harder, more sustainable erections. I learned about Gainswave from my podcast guest, Dr. Judson Brandeis at the Brandeis MD Clinic in Northern California, and there's a robust network of Gainswave providers that you can find on their website near you. Complete a series of treatments, and the beneficial effects will last for a long time, especially if you eat and exercise well to promote overall vascular health. It's a tune-up for your equipment, and while it's great for ED, Gainswave is for any man that wants to combat the effects of aging and get a little boost for your A-game. So please visit Gainswave.com/Brad. That's Gainswave.com/Brad to find a practitioner in your area, and you can take advantage of my special promotion. Buy 6 treatments and get one free. You have nothing to lose and lots to gain from Gainswave.com/Brad.
Med school was
now it's just getting into University of California. You have to have all A's. Yeah.
Yeah. So like a year in, I'm like, this sucks. I have to study like 10 hours a day to get all A's.
Yeah.
And, you know, 7 hours a day to get A minus average. But I get a B plus with 3 hours a day. And so I
with
said
more free time to
yeah. And I said, you know what? I'm not that interested in med school, and I am interested in getting good grades, but I'm not interested in allocating that amount of my life.
Yeah.
To in other words, the marginal utility of the next hour of studying dropped off dramatically.
Maybe you should have been an econ major instead.
I know. Yeah. I minored in econ. So I did 2 to 3 hours of study a day and got my B plus average. And so that's now kind of how I live my life,
which is
I like to be in B plus fitness. So I'm not racing Ironman next year in the 70 plus age group.
We talked about it, but we saw those times were pretty fast still. So
I could do it on a bet.
Right. With the whole,
on a bet. If I was willing to give up.
Right.
A lot of my enjoyment of life over the next year.
Say goodbye to Grandpa. JJ's going to go train for 5 hours like he did in the 80s.
Yeah. I could do that, but it's not appealing to me.
Right.
So my own particular vision of health and fitness in combination, and maximizing or optimizing each before the inflection point drops off is, you know, I have a cross training lifestyle that is fat biking on the beach. I get to ride the bike as hard as I want. I get to keep my heart rate as high as I, you know, on those hard days, mm-hmm. I can ramp it up. I do stand up paddling. So it's a full body workout, with relatively low heart rate. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting how it's a cardio workout and I come off and I'm like pumped and, you know, I've been working hard for an hour, hour and 10, sometimes an hour and 20, but not more than an hour and 20 ever. So that's a full body workout. I'll do sprints on the beach, but not so much that I need to set a PR, but yeah. just enough to get, I mean, the thing about sprinting is so, which is so amazing is, five repetitions or six repetitions of a 30-second sprint is enough to do some amazing, have some amazing mm-hmm. maintenance or even breakthrough. Now I'll mm-hmm. do, you know, I try to do 8 to 10 when I do sprints, but it's still the workout from warm up and cool down is 35 minutes mm-hmm. and I'm done. So I could say, well, I'm pretty good at sprinting still. Maybe I should train for sprinting, but then I get injured.
Yeah.
So I don't want to get injured. I want to find a way to cross train so that I spend 2 days in the gym where I'm just doing lifting stuff, which you would almost call it bodybuilding stuff now. It's like, you know, full body routine kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I play some ultimate frisbee, which is a game that I enjoy and to the extent that I can keep doing it. But my point is I mix it up every day. So I don't ever do two things in a row. Like mm-hmm. if I'm lifting in the gym, I need at least 72 hours and sometimes mm-hmm. 96 hours between lifting sessions. Because I know that's what, like if I lifted hard enough to be effective, then I should not be able to repeat that performance right. within yeah. 72 hours.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I didn't do it well enough. Now, part of that's because at my age, it just takes longer to recover. So when I was in my 20s, I could lift every other day.
Yeah.
And there, you know, I had enough testosterone, I had enough growth hormone, I had all these things that I could recover and build by lifting every other day. So anyway, so I would lift, say on a Monday, I might ride the bike on a Tuesday and go hard on the bike. I might paddle on a Wednesday, which is still upper body, but it's a different form. It's instead of doing, you know, three sets of 10 or 12 reps, it's basically one set of 2,000 reps of a full body
yeah.
exercise, right? And it's all and so the average output per rep is dramatically reduced. I might sprint on another day once every 10 days. I'll do a leg day in the gym where I'm doing a series of leg exercises, but it's kind of all based around a hex bar deadlift as kind of the centerpiece of that workout. Now, I'm really fit, but I'm not race fit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'm fit for life. I'm fit for movement, I'm fit for games, but
you're
I'm not
fit to do your routine, which you enjoy.
Yeah.
And you just said you never go over an hour 20.
Yeah.
Why don't you do a 3 hour paddle, Mark?
It has no interest. No, right. Zero interest.
Right.
So it's funny, back in the olden days, after doing Ironman, I realized that I could do anything for 24 hours. But once you cost me a night's sleep,
yeah,
I'm not interested. Right. So I got invited to be on these adventure racing yeah. teams, cool. you know, yeah. You know, before Mark Burnett was doing Survivor, he was doing adventure racing. Even before he actually participated in Ray Galois. And I was, you know, I was talking to him about being on his team. And I was like, I'm not willing to give up
ridiculous
nine yeah. nights of sleep in pursuit of that yeah. goal. Right. Yeah. So then I said I could do anything for 24 hours. And then as I've gotten older, the amount of time I'm willing yeah. to do anything has dropped down. And so, you know, I would do a hike for 2 hours a couple of years ago, yeah. a hard hike. Uh-huh. And then that's like, no, it's just not, it doesn't feel like it's a sweet spot. So now yeah. an hour is like my sweet spot for anything yeah. I do. So if I do an hour 10 on the bike and the sand, it's all, and it's hard. That's a great day for me. If I do an hour 20 of anything, including paddling, that's the most I'll ever do now.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's a sweet spot because I'm getting the good hard work done, but I'm also allowing myself, I'm not getting beat up so that it takes me 4 days just to recover to do anything, right?
Yeah.
So if you remember back in the, well, as a marathoner, it actually took longer to recover from a marathon than it did from a triathlon.
From an Ironman.
From an Ironman.
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh,
because
yeah.
a marathon.
Because you're going fast.
You're going fast from the gun. It's painful. It's hard on the joints. I mean, we used to piss black after the end of a race. It was like, you know, you're like, you got a little rhabdo going. You got a little, it was horrible. In an Ironman, I'm not diminishing anything because we didn't get to the level that I didn't get to the level that the guys are doing right now. But it was so difficult, but spread out over such a long period of time that by the time you finished the marathon, you weren't really pounding. You were barely, you know, you were barely moving. So it wasn't like you were sprint finishing.
Still tough, but
well, it was wicked tough, and it took a long time to recover. Yeah. But and the vow that I'll never do this again lasted for four or five days, and then
the last one.
Yeah, right.
Then you say maybe you didn't say I'll never do it again. You just think I'm going to improve my time next
year. Yeah,
now, but then that you start, was the last one.
No, you start thinking, yeah, okay, that's what I could do. But anyway, so I don't know, I'm
rambling. So you're describing all these fitness exercise activities. We were talking about metabolic efficiency in terms of diet, and we mostly hear that in terms of diet.
Yeah.
But that also relates to all the stuff you just described.
Yeah.
Because metabolic efficiency has both sides, the calories that you burn and the calories that you
theoretically,
consume and process.
When you're working out hard, you in my book, you literally don't want to be expending a lot of calories. You want to be doing amount of work you're doing, over time, you want to be able to do that same amount of work with fewer calories. Right. Or with greater ease, I should say. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And with a higher percentage of the energy coming from the combustion of fats versus carbohydrates. At the elite level, you can say, well, it doesn't matter where the fuel source comes from as long as I'm able to get fuel in during the race. And I was a great sugar burner as a marathoner, carbo loaded every day, managed my fuel intake. So I'm not suggesting that I would have been much faster as a marathoner had I trained at keto, because I was still going fast enough that it was impossible. Yeah.
You're running now when you start, something per mile.
Yeah, low fives per mile. So when you say somebody like Zach Bitter, he's a keto, you know, long distance ultra runner. Yeah, he's getting 97% of his calories from fat at 6:54 a mile or something, right?
He's running 100 miles.
He's running 100 miles.
So it's a whole different category.
So it's a different category. Yeah. And as the length of, like when Sammy Inkin and his wife rode a boat from San Francisco to Hawaii.
Yeah.
You know, they had 1.5 million
43 days.
Yeah. They had like almost all their provisions were fat.
Yeah.
Fat and protein.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because Amazing. That they were pacing themselves to burn almost all fat doing that.
Right. So you're doing this with your hands, and I'm thinking health or longevity could count the same thing.
Right.
So it sounds like you're trying to dial in both sides of that.
Yeah.
Longevity equation, where you're eating appropriately as well as being efficient with your caloric expenditure.
Right.
So I think that's an important question when I'm thinking about eating more food and performing better and recovering faster, but also looking at that side where how much is enough. And that's this tightrope, which we probably don't have answers to, but I'd love to know, you know, like, are you fit enough to say that you're getting a 99% score on longevity, or should you once in a while throw down a 3-hour paddle so that you can make it to 115 instead of 105?
Yeah, I would say no to that. I would say there's no.
You've already graduated past.
Already gone past. Like, you know, Mark Allen will tell you he thinks he left 10 years of his life on the lava fields of Hawaii by going so deeply to the well. So for me to do a hardish 3-hour anything, again, it's antithetical to longevity. I think there's a point at which, because going back to the Rob Wolf, Doug McGuff, you know, notion that all exercise is cardio. And if cardio as a generic term for moving the heart in a beneficial way that promotes health, if what you're after is a healthy heart to keep pumping for as long as you can, you could argue that if you subscribe to the finite number of heartbeats theory, that you're better off after having developed a strong heart to then ramp it down a little bit rather than keeping your heart rate high all the time. You want to keep it strong, but lifting weights keeps your heart strong. You know, mm-hmm. we would, you know, that when you go to the gym and you do a heavy leg day, like when I do deadlifts, I'm out of breath. Mm-hmm. It takes me a long time to recover to be able to do the next set. Mm-hmm. My heart's beating really fast. That's cardio. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a signal that your willingness to do the work. So your brain tells your legs and everything to drop down and lift this heavy weight. And the heart's just going, all right, I guess it's time to get to work. So we got to beat faster. The heart has no say in the matter. The heart is responding to the signals produced by your wanting to do the work. And then you're doing the work with the muscles that you have. So, any form of exercise is cardio.
Mm-hmm. And I guess most people that are, interested in health or wishing for better health don't move enough and eat too many processed foods.
So exactly.
As far as metabolic efficiency, you're screwed over here and over here. And then we're looking at lifelong insidious weight gain.
So back to the opening statement of eat more nutritious foods, mostly protein, and move more. that advice applies to 90% of the population who eats a shitty diet and doesn't move enough to begin with. So great, I agree with all that. Now, as you get better and better and more developed and more more keto adapted and fat adapted, maybe that advice, maybe you don't need to move more. Maybe you need to more just, you know, move, do what you're doing, and maybe you don't even need to eat more because you're in that zone where you're sort of optimizing the curve of health and fitness as they go together just before the inflection point. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's a tough one to figure out. And obviously, every time I can report an injury or even muscle soreness, I contend that I made a mistake and I went past the inflection point.
Yeah.
Same with a minor illness.
No, but you play on the edge. Well, I mean, that's, I say play on the edge, and that's back to the experimental one. Like, okay, I played on the edge. I saw where the issue was. I dialed it back. I won't do that again, or I'll try not to do that again. Or if I do that again, shame on me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's the experiment. That's the playing around with it. But most people don't even play on the edge. Most people have a long way to go. They got to lose 50 pounds of body fat. They got to
ditch all that food,
get rid of all the, the industrial seed oils, the sugary, the crunchy, salty, fatty, sweet, all the stuff that, they're using in the standard American diet. And then thinking that portion control will get me where I need to be.
Mm.
You know, that's really the greatest misconception about calories in, calories out, is that you can't just fix a shitty diet with portion control.
Yeah.
It doesn't work that way. Yeah. You got to eat nutritious food, calorie dense foods. So.
Protein is a priority.
Always. Yeah. Protein is the major must have. You know, get your protein right. And again, it doesn't even have to be meal to meal. It doesn't even have to be day to day. It can be over a period of 3 or 4 days, certainly over a week. If you took in the right amount of protein, your body will adjust with its all of its mechanisms for retaining amino acids. So, and then, fat to sort of control, I would say, energy expenditures, and then carbohydrates, partly to refuel glycogen, but mostly because carbs are in many cases one of the most enjoyable parts of some people's diet, and I don't want you to have to restrict them just because.
What about thyroid function, adrenals, recovery from stress, nutritious carbohydrates?
But you can do all that on a low carb,
relatively low carb comparison to shitty Western diet.
Yeah, yeah. If you're eating nutrient dense foods, and even if you're keto, you're not gonna, if you're doing it right, and you're not working out, too hard glycolytically every other day. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of ways in which you can mess up a otherwise perfectly balanced keto program. Just pay attention. But if the answer to you is, I don't want to make all those adjustments and I'd rather just ramp up my carbs, then if you're metabolically flexible, fine, it'll work.
What do you see in the decades ahead with your strategy? Are you going to gracefully take that fat tire bike down to 40 minutes from an hour? And
no,
same with everything. Are you going to try to just fight that battle?
No, I'm going to fight the battle. I'm going to do as much as feels comfortable for as long as it feels comfortable.
Right.
You know, so I don't, right now, an hour to an hour and 10 feels like a hard ride, feels comfortable. And comfortable is also defined as something I could do again in a couple of days.
Mm.
But if I do something for, you know, too hard, too long, then I sour on it. I get like, nah, I'm not.
Yeah, tell us about your summer where you did the hard bike ride, flew on a jet, and then landed, and then went straight to the water for a long lesson, and you cooked yourself.
Yeah.
What was that? That sequence?
That was recently.
Yeah, you did the fat tire bike ride.
Oh, no. You know what it was? No, I'll tell you what it was. It wasn't swimming. I thought it was swimming you're talking about. No. I did a long, hard bike ride with my buddy. And by the way, this is the other thing. He's one of those half-wheelers like I was.
A half-wheeler is defined as?
Someone who just will not let you get ahead. They always got to stay.
A friendly
even though
conversation.
You're riding together, he's always a half-wheel ahead. And so, you know, Peter and I did like an hour and 45 minute sand, you know, hard, hot beach ride, and then hopped on a plane, flew to Necker Island. And that afternoon, I had my first kite surfing lesson. Well, the first kite surfing lesson is basically, you know, controlling the kite in the water without a board and just they call it body dragging. So you let the kite drag your body. And I'm in the water for an hour and a half without a wetsuit because it's the Caribbean. But, you know, the water's still 76 or 77. And so I got hyperthermic.
Yeah, look at the charts. Your 98.6 body is going to get cold
and my 9% body fat.
Yeah.
So I got cold. Well, I had a thing the next day. I had another lesson the next morning.
Yeah.
And I showed up for that. And I got up and I got a nice 20-second ride. But I got sick because it was just too much stress. Right. So.
Were you fasted on that day and that flight?
No, I ate. Yeah. I ate enough to, you know, fuel myself. But still, the work itself, the hard in the heat, the hard fat bike on the sand, in the heat, and then flying to the island, and then like I say, first thing we do when we get there, your lesson is at 3:00.
Yeah. Boom.
So boom,
hit the water.
Yeah. Anyways, I mean, it was great. It was fun, but it was also like I know better than that. But you know, when I'm out in the middle of the channel and a mile away from the pickup boat, floating in the water, shivering, waiting for the boat to come get me. It's not like I say, well, I better get out now.
Yeah.
It's like I got another 20 minutes of this before I...
You know that research on hypothermia, if you fall off the boat into cold water, you're going to last for this long.
Yeah.
And you're going to last for half as long if you're swimming.
Yeah.
So if you see shore and you swim for it and it takes 10 minutes... and then you die, or you stay still in one place for 20 minutes, but you have to decide how far is the shore.
Right.
Just so you know, in case you ever get in cold water.
Yeah.
I think we got a lot of good information helping reconcile some of these apparently disparate points of view. But I really think some of the important points he emphasized when you're talking through your weekly exercise schedule is working within your capabilities and not being in this category that we both fell into for so long, where we were burning too many calories, eating what would be considered too many calories in a lot of ways, especially because you have to take in processed foods at that point to get to 8,000 or whatever.
Yep.
That, in fact, is the performance limiter for the top high-performing, highest calorie-burning athletes like the Ironman triathletes and the bodybuilders.
Right.
So that's a big one. And then starting out way back when, you said it's important to look at this as an experiment of one and constantly try to optimize and see what works and what's individual for you.
Within the context of what we just talked about today, within the context of nutrient-dense food, protein being the number one macro that you need to really keep an eye on, you know, healthy fats, avoiding industrial seed oils, avoiding, you know, pies, cakes, candies, and sugars and crap like that as much as you can. Within that context, there's a lot of room to play around in terms of meal timing and, you know, whether you're keto or not, whether you're, you know, 2 meals a day or 4 meals a day, there's room for experimenting there.
And there's room for chilling out about it too.
Yeah.
When you get into that over obsession with all these things.
Yeah.
Listen to the cis in people. That's what we're talking about. Thank you.
Greetings, my fitness-minded listeners. I want to acquaint you with the Primal Fitness Expert Certification Program, the most comprehensive home study multimedia fitness education course in the world. If you want to enhance your personal knowledge of all aspects of leading a healthy, active, fit lifestyle, this total immersion course will be life-changing. I'm the lead instructor and author of the course, and we have 14 chapters of extensive written content with over 100 accompanying videos covering topics such as general everyday movement, including micro workouts and dynamic workstation tips, the full experience of gym-based strength training and all the different modalities, a complete presentation on all aspects of sprinting, both running and low impact options, an assortment of high intensity interval training and high intensity repeat training strategies, a detailed education on the principles and practical application of aerobic endurance training, and extensive commentary, the most you will find in any publication, on all aspects and symptoms of overtraining and burnout. We even have fascinating peripheral topics like integrating nasal diaphragmatic breathing, dynamic stretching, injury prevention, and developing a peak performance mindset. It's really something, this course. We went all out for over 2 years with a great team to develop this amazing home-based fitness education for you. And you get one-on-one expert email support and private Facebook group connection throughout your studies to ensure that you absorb everything optimally and you pass your series of exams and get certified. So go to primalhealthcoach.com/Brad to enjoy a very special limited time. And I'm not kidding. This is a big time discount just for you. 25% off your tuition. A fantastic premium offer at primalhealthcoach.com/Brad for the most comprehensive fitness course you can ever find. Thank you for listening to the show. I love sharing the experience with you and greatly appreciate your support. Please email podcast@bradventures.com with feedback, suggestions, and questions for the Q&A shows. Subscribe to our email list at bradkearns.com for a weekly blast about the published episodes and a wonderful bi-monthly newsletter edition with informative articles and practical tips for all aspects of healthy living. You can also download several awesome free ebooks when you subscribe to the email list. And if you could go to the trouble to leave a 5 or 5-star review with Apple Podcasts or wherever else you listen to the shows, that would be super incredibly awesome. It helps raise the profile of the BRAD podcast and attract new listeners. And did you know that you can share a show with a friend or loved one by just hitting a few buttons in your player and firing off a text message? My awesome podcast player called Overcast allows you to actually record a soundbite excerpt from the episode you're listening to and fire it off with a quick text message. Thank you so much for spreading the word. And remember, be rad.